Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives, and check us out on Instagram, instagram.com/greatdetectives. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. And I also want to encourage you to check out our other podcast. And today I'm highlighting The Amazing World of Radio at amazing.greatdetectives.net. And this week we will have 3 episodes posted. First, we will be concluding our Women's History series, The Amazing Women of Radio, on Wednesday. And then Saturday and Sunday, we will be bringing you 2 Easter specials. And we've got so many great programs we've done over the years, including our summers of Humphrey Bogart and Angela Lansbury, and our most recent summer series highlighting the Cary Grant old-time radio sitcom Mr. and Mrs. Blandings. I want to encourage you to check out The Amazing World of Radio at amazing.greatdetectives.net or in your podcast store. And you can find all of our podcasts over at our homepage at greatdetectives.net. Well, now it is time for us to return to the sort of things that we typically do on Tuesdays. I loved doing the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar serials, but it's great to get back into the sort of shorter run, more off the beaten path type programs, and we definitely are going that direction here. We're revisiting a series that we played all of the episodes that we had previously, actually pretty close to the time we started in on the Yours Truly Johnny Dollar serials. We're returning to Dr. Tim Detective, which was an old-time radio series from the early 50s, originating from Denver, and the Rocky Mountain Radio Council produced it. It was targeted towards a juvenile audience and used the idea of a detective / doctor named Dr. Tim teaming up with 2 youngsters to investigate all sorts of mysteries. Now, this episode, I don't have an exact date for. It'd be sometime in the early 1950s, though. And I'll talk about why I wouldn't necessarily date it within the range of the episodes we played previously. So here now is The Mystery of the Roller Coaster Ride.
The American Medical Association, in cooperation with your local medical society, presents Dr. Tim Detective.
This is Dr. Tim Detective, to bring you by transcription, The Mystery of the Roller Coaster Ride. It was as simple as that. 1 minute, the solitary figure was alone in the back seat of the roller coaster, and the next minute, he wasn't. Sandy and Jill, my good friends, agree with me that this mystery was one of the most peculiar in my career as medical doctor and detective. Part of the reason is that death in an amusement park seems especially inappropriate. And the other part is... But let's go back to the beginning. On this particular evening, the 3 of us had declared a holiday to usher in the springtime and had decided on an outing at Mammoth Park on the outskirts of the city. And we were having a big time, too.
Gee, Dr. Tim, what would you do if one of your patients caught you riding the merry-go-round like this?
I'm not worried, Jill. It's just another way of proving that doctors are human beings.
This thing seems to be slowing down. Another dime's worth?
I've had about enough, Sandy. Where to next?
The roller coaster.
Pardon me if I sit this one out,
sissy.
Chicken. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. At least not half as much as a ride on the roller coaster on top of a full stomach. Well, shall we dismount from these fiery steeds and perambulate along the midway?
Okay by me. I understand they have some real educational exhibits there.
Oh, such as?
Well, shooting galleries, maybe, or...
Or Della the Cooch Dancer, how she shakes and how she quivers.
Hey, what's going on over there, where the crowd is?
Ah, me, the great American public. Sometimes I despair.
Well, why? What is it?
One of the last remnants of the old-time medicine show from the time of our pioneer ancestors. Remedies, no doubt, brewed from Indian herbs and secret recipes and guaranteed to cure ingrowing toenails.
Shall we watch?
Why not? Although usually these days the stuff is peddled by polished-looking gentlemen dressed up in white coats, using scientific words and trying to make like doctors. Well, here we are.
The genuine, the original, the miraculous healing remedy from a secret Indian recipe handed down from son to father, I mean father to son, throughout the generations, the only cure for upset stomach aches and pains, arthritis, and for hives, for rheumatism, earache, kidney stones, and tonsillitis, and a miracle in treating common colds. What's that, lady? Adenoids? Of course it's good for adenoids. It'll dissolve them right out of your little boy's nose. Why, would you believe it? Before I obtained the secret of Chief Kachobi's patent cure-all, I used to talk like this to help her. Two bottles, ma'am. Two bottles only. And here I stand today, speaking the King's English with pure and bell-like tones. Now, while Princess Xenia entertains you with sweet strains of melody, my assistants will pass among you with Chief Kachobi's wonder medicine, good for man or beast or woman. Yes, sir.
Good night. They're actually buying that stuff.
I'm afraid they are, kids. I can stand no more. Let's go rest our feet somewhere.
Like maybe under the counter at the ice cream stand?
Yeah, we haven't eaten anything for all of a half an hour.
I'll accompany you, but as for sustenance, include me out, please.
Oh, come on, Dr. Tim. You can have one more dish of frozen custard.
I cannot, and I will not. Overeating accounts for half the ills of mankind. Indigestion, overweight...
You can always take Chief Kachobi's patent remedy to fix that up.
Oh.
What do you suppose is in that stuff, anyway?
Probably about 15 cents worth of assorted useless drugs and $2.35 worth of high-pressure salesmanship. Price, $2.50.
You mean it wouldn't really hurt you?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. Ordinarily, aspirin seems like a pretty harmless drug.
Oh, isn't it?
Not when it's used to cover up the symptoms and pain of a disease which might need prompt medical treatment. Well, shall we resume our walk?
Sure, come on.
About that medicine, Dr. Tim, what sort of drugs would they put in it?
Oh, first, I suppose some kind of painkiller like aspirin. Then alcohol, of course, they usually is.
Why?
Oh, it gives you a temporary feeling of well-being, Sandy, and helps to dull the pain. Then I'd guess some sort of laxative.
Well, that might be awfully serious if your tummy pain's appendicitis. You taught us that.
But gosh, you can buy all those things at a drugstore pretty cheap. Why pay all that money for...
Human nature, Sandy. Secret cures, sure cures. All the mystery about medicine that doctors have been trying to debunk for years. Because we know there's no such thing as a cure-all. The drugs which may help one person might do untold harm to another. Only your doctor knows which is the right medicine for you. Remember the old saying, one man's meat is another man's poison.
And speaking of another man's poison, Jill, here's our meat.
I wonder how in the world we happen to end up at the roller coaster. But of course, since we're here...
Shall we kidnap him?
Oh, no, you don't. I refuse utterly. Wild horses will not drag me.
Come on, Doc.
No, and again, no. Absolutely not. The answer is finally and irrevocably in the negative, and I mean it. And that's how I found myself in the front seat of the roller coaster, firmly hedged in by Jill and Sandy, still protesting as the car crept up the incline... Ready for the first sickening plunge.
Here we go. Hold on to your seats and don't stand up. Oh,
wait,
it is not. I think.
Say, look at that guy in the back seat. This sure is a funny place to be swigging joy juice out of a bottle.
Pretty dangerous, I agree, but it's none of our business.
Well, gee, if he drank too much, he might fall out.
Hold on. Here we go again. It's a big one.
Well, it's over. Like to ride again?
I would not.
Hey, now what do you think of that?
What's the matter, Sandy?
I think I'm seeing things, or not seeing things. That guy in the back seat, he's disappeared.
You mean the one that was drinking out of the bottle?
He was there, and now he isn't. Do you suppose he could have...
Oh, how awful.
I guess he could have fallen out if he was drunk enough. Kids, we'd better find the manager. Five minutes later, a small crowd stood around in a silent circle, flashlights pointing toward a broken figure on the ground underneath the crisscross scaffolding of the roller coaster. As I bent over him, he was still alive, though barely, and unconscious. And I was sure of one thing. He wasn't drunk. There were other signs, however, ones I didn't like. He was either doped or poisoned.
Here comes the ambulance.
Well, it's too late now. He's dead. Sandy, you and Jill see if you can find that bottle.
You mean the one he was drinking out of?
Yes.
Well, sure, but why?
Just an idea. I'm going to call the medical examiner and have a talk with him. I'll meet you at the car. After making my phone call, I waited at the car. Another crowd had gathered around the peddler of Chief Kachobi's wonderful cure-all, and I could hear his pitch.
And not for $5, not for $4, not even $3, but the amazing low introductory price of $2.50, guaranteed to prevent the common cold. You had a question, sir? Why, of course it's good for gallstones. Just look at me, my friend. Why, you'd never believe that a short 3 weeks ago, I was doubled up in pain like this.
Medicine to cure gallstones, indeed. And as yet, we doctors know nothing to prevent a cold. When we do, our patients will be the first to learn about it.
Well, Dr. Tim, here we are.
Oh, you find that bottle?
Yeah, we found it all right. In 100 pieces. Not a drop of liquid left to analyze.
Uh-huh. Completely shattered.
Oh, well, that's life, I guess. We'll have to wait for the report on the stomach contents from the lab. Come on, kids, it's time to go home. When the lab report did arrive from the medical examiner's office, it proved I was right. The man was not drunk. The three of us pondered the case after school in my office.
You mean he hadn't been drinking?
The analysis showed only as much alcohol as, a glass or two of beer.
And no poison?
Nope, none whatsoever. Well, I guess it was just an accident after all.
Gee, these lab reports are complicated. What does this mean? In the organs of the deceased were found 5 grains of acetylsalicylic acid.
That's common aspirin, Jill.
Oh. A small amount of ethyl alcohol.
That's simple enough.
Evidences of oh, good night.
Glyceriza glabra.
That's enough to kill anybody.
It's a scientific word for licorice. Just plain old licorice.
Well, why don't they say so? Anyway, and one of the antihistaminic drugs.
Antihistamine? Isn't that the stuff you take for hay fever or when you're getting a cold or something?
Well, some people do. There's no good medical evidence that the antihistamines will prevent a cold. They're very useful drugs when taken by doctor's orders in certain cases of allergy, such as hay fever, asthma, hives, and the like.
But nothing in that junk that could have killed him.
I'm afraid not.
And it couldn't have been the other stuff they found, mineral oil and that cough syrup medicine.
Good night. It sounds as if he might have been drinking Chief Kachobi's patent cure-all.
Chief Kachobi? Hey, hold on now. That might not be so foolish as it sounds.
But it wouldn't kill him, would it?
No, but... Wait a minute, kids. I'm beginning to have an idea. I want to look something up in one of my medical books.
Jill?
Huh?
I just remembered something. When we were looking for that bottle under the scaffolding...
Yeah?
Well, there was a part of a label sticking to one of the pieces of broken glass. I tore it off and I'd forgotten it till just now. Here it is.
Does it say anything? Hey, it looks like an Indian or something with a headdress.
Chief Kachobi. Dr. Tim, let's go to Mammoth Park.
You looking for me? Late night last night. I ain't only just got up. Want something?
Yes.
So, you want I should add mind reading to my pitch?
First, I ought to tell you that I'm a medical doctor.
Gee, kids, you witness that? Got the docs coming to buy old Kachobi now. You look like maybe you got a little liver trouble, Doc.
Dr. Tim's a detective, too.
I'll say he is.
Oh, a copper, eh? Well, I'm clean. You can't pin nothing on me.
Do you realize that stuff you peddle is responsible for a man's death?
Says who? Look, wise guy. Chief Kochobi's secret remedy is as pure as the drifted snow. I make it myself. In a barrel. It's a clean barrel, too.
And just when did you start using antihistamine drugs along with the alcohol and licorice and cough syrup and aspirin?
Oh, so that's it. You think you docs are the only ones read magazine articles and newspaper stories. I gotta keep up with science, too, seeing as I'm in the business. So when I find out this anti-stuff is terrific for preventing a cold, I improve on my secret recipe. Anything wrong with that?
Only that you've caused at least one death. When you buy that medicine in a drugstore, at least it has a warning printed on it.
Well, what kind of warning, Dr. Tim?
Well, as with a lot of so-called harmless medicines, there might be 99 people out of 100 who can take antihistamine without ill effects. But the hundreds...
Was the man on the roller coaster, huh?
He was. We doctors have constantly warned our patients not to drive a car while taking the drug, or to expose themselves to any physical risks, or situations requiring bodily coordination. The antihistamines can put people to sleep, or send them off on a jag the way alcohol does, and cause them to lose control of their muscles and reflexes.
So that's what happened.
Exactly. He must have had a whole bottle of that stuff under his belt to prevent a cold or something, and then plunged to his death, complete loss of control. As for you...
Me, Doc?
I just wanted to be sure you were using those drugs in the mixture. The rest is up to the police.
Now, look, Doc, can't we fix this up somehow?
What do you mean?
Well, a few bucks, maybe, or even a partnership. I'll leave this antihistamine stuff out of the blend in the future, and, well, you can figure out what we can use. You know, sort of sponsor the stuff, recommended by an eminent doctor. What do you say?
I'd give him a punch in the nose.
My reflexes were working, I guess. I'll have to confess to that sock in the kisser. This is Dr. Tim, Detective, saying goodbye now at the end of our series. These programs have been brought to you on behalf of your local medical society by the American Medical Association. Bob Hahn speaking. Dr. Tim, Detective is written and directed by Jack Weir Lewis and is produced and transcribed by the Rocky Mountain Radio Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Tim decided that since this was going to be his last episode, that he was going to give us some fisticuffs. Really thought we'd get past that on Tuesdays with Johnny Dollar no longer being here, but there you go. If I had asked listeners beforehand, which detective would you bet on taking a swing at a nonviolent suspect? I don't think Dr. Tim would have been the choice. But it's hard to blame him too much. As Dr. Tim explained, poorly formulated or improperly labeled remedies can not only be ineffective at treating ailments, but they can actually do serious harm or even kill people. And to expect him to sign on for that for money was just not going to happen. And we still have these same sort of things going on 70 years later, though I couldn't tell you exactly how many years it had been. The episode is intriguing. It's stated as being the last episode of the series. David Golden was able to verify that the man from Hiroshima was episode 13, which you'd expect to be the last episode of a 13-episode series. There are two possibilities here. First, that the episodes were renumbered as a part of a later syndication for some reason, or that the order varies and different stations may have played it in different orders, and the last episode message at the end may have been some variation. Second, the series might have been extended, and this might be the end of a second series or later. Sandy does sound a little older in this series than he did last time we heard him. And of course, we also in this episode learn the name of the actor who played Dr. Tim, Bob Hahn. Now, what I know about Bob Hahn from my research is he was born in Illinois and moved to Denver when he was 8. He was the associate director of the Rocky Mountain Radio Council, and he is credited as the writer of 4 episodes of the other Rocky Mountain Radio Council series that we know about, This is Civil Defense. And we actually played one of the episodes that he wrote over on the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon last year. I also know that he left in 1957 to work for an advertising agency, but that's all I've been able to find out about Bob Hahn. So there's a lot of mystery about him, and I'd love to know more of his story, as well as hear more episodes of Dr. Tim Detective. Still, I'm grateful for what we have. Now, this was only 15 minutes, and we'll have a 15-minute Ellery Queen episode next week. But pairing them seemed like a very unnatural fit. And then I heard something that would fit better. An episode of Adventures in Research. Like Dr. Tim Detective, Adventures in Research takes us out of your traditional old-time radio hub to Pittsburgh. Adventures in Research began in 1943 and was sponsored by the Westinghouse Research Laboratories and highlights different stories of science and human achievement in making important discoveries to advance our progress. The series ran for 12 years. According to the Library of Congress, by the time that the episode we're going to play today aired, this series was heard on 243 commercial and educational stations. It also was broadcast over the Armed Forces radio service stations, as well as the members of the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System. The series was hosted throughout its run by Paul Shannon, whose main claim to fame is being the original host of the 1958-79 children's educational series, Adventure Time. Now, while you'd probably expect to hear an episode of Adventures in Research on the Old Time Radio Snack Wagon, and you certainly will hear sometime, when I heard this newly circulated episode, I knew it would be perfect paired with this Dr. Tim story because it really feels like a Dr. Tim story, except it actually happened and there are no children sidekicks. So here from June the 17th, 1952, is this episode of Adventures in Research, The Health Detective.
Adventures in Research. This is Paul Shannon bringing you another transcribed story of science, produced as a public service in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. And today telling you the story of a man who is best described as a health detective. Like most detectives, his weapons were those of science. But unlike the private eye of today, his victim was not a human criminal. It was a fatal disease. This is the story of Dr. John Snow, the health detective. Our story begins in the London of 1854, on a shabby-looking street called Broad Street, right near Golden Square. The date is important, too. Sunday, August 27th. For on that day, Broad Street heard a word it had always been afraid of. Cholera. Yes, Asiatic cholera had swept down upon London once again. Once again, there was panic. Panic which the medical profession seemed unable to check. For the people of London remembered the cholera epidemic of 1847, and before that, the epidemic of 1831. But this time, there was one big difference. The authorities took prompt counteraction. They turned to a man who had studied cholera as a detective studies the habits of a criminal. a man who had already achieved distinction in medical circles, Dr. John Snow. They asked him to head a committee to inquire into the cause of the epidemic. He accepted willingly. Working together with an engineer named York, Dr. Snow set about his task like the scientist he was.
Mr. York, I should like you to study this map of London.
Yes, doctor. What do all those pins represent?
Each pin represents 10 deaths. And my information comes directly from the General Register Office. You will notice there are 57 pins in that map. 570 fatal attacks of cholera in 10 days.
Shocking. It's absolutely shocking.
Quite. And now let me call your attention to something even more shocking. Do you notice anything unusual about the distribution of the pins?
Why, yes. They seem to cluster around this area, over here.
Precisely. There are exactly 50 of those pins in the vicinity of Golden Square. Most of them on Broad Street.
Well, on second thought, that's not surprising. Broad Street is where so many of the poor live. Poor general health and all that sort of thing. Well, shouldn't that account for it?
Not entirely, Mr. York. Now, I think there's another reason.
You do?
Here, let me read you some more figures. During the week ending Saturday, September 2nd, there were 89 deaths in the entire Golden Square district. Of those 89, from Sunday, August 27th, to Wednesday, the 30th, there were only 6. On Thursday, the 31st, only 4. But on Friday and Saturday, there were 79. Those were the 2 days when the epidemic struck with fury. 79 on Friday and Saturday. And 3 days later, the total rose to 570.
Doctor, I confess I'm baffled. Completely. What do you propose?
Well, very simple, and I hope effective procedure. Obviously, we cannot hope to study 570 deaths in the next few weeks. But we can do this. I propose to take the 79 cases who died on Friday and Saturday and learn as much as possible about them.
But how, Doctor?
By knocking on doors, asking questions, talking to neighbors, getting as much information as I can from anyone who'll give it to me. You see, I have a theory about the cholera, the one that I formulated during the epidemic of 47.
Oh, yes, your theory. Well, what is it?
With your permission, I should like to wait until I've studied those 79 deaths. If they prove what I think they will, we may be able to control cholera forever.
No inquiring reporter was ever more persistent than Dr. Snow. He covered Broad Street and vicinity like a well-trained door-to-door salesman, and he did just as much talking.
Good day, sir. You're Mr. Wilkins, aren't you?
I am.
I've been appointed to investigate the cholera epidemic. My name's Dr. Snow.
You're too late, Doctor. My wife is dead.
I'm very sorry, Mr. Wilkins. But perhaps if you'll help me, we may be able to put a stop to it, to see that no one will ever die of cholera again. Will you cooperate?
All right, I will.
Thank you.
Take that chair, Doctor. It's the most comfortable one.
Much obliged. Now, just a few questions. How old was your wife?
42.
Had she ever been sick before?
She had the smallpox when she was a child, but nothing more.
I see. Any children?
2. They're in the country with my mother.
Ah, good. I assume your wife did all the cooking?
Yes.
Tell me, Mr. Wilkins, where do you get your drinking and cooking water?
Why, we get it where everybody else gets it, from the pump down the street.
The Broad Street pump?
That's what everybody calls it, Doctor. The Broad Street pump.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. That will be all.
Next, Dr. Snow visited the proprietor of a coffee house in the area.
Mr. Blackwell, you are the owner of this place.
That I am, Governor. And a very respectable place it is. Can I offer you a cup of coffee?
Thank you, no. I understand that 5 of your customers have died of the cholera. Is that true?
Yes, Governor, that's true. But that's got nothing to do with my coffee now.
I'm sure you do the very best you can, Mr. Blackwell. These 5 customers of yours, Did you ever notice any of them ill while they were here?
I can't rightly say I did, Governor. They was all took kind of sudden-like.
Did they all enjoy your coffee?
Oh, I should hope so. I makes the best cup of coffee in London, I does.
Oh, really? How do you make it?
Well, sir, first I get some of that there coffee you sees up there on the shelf. Very good it is, too. Comes from the colony somewhere. Then I takes a sufficient quantity of water, and I boils it.
You boil it?
I do.
Well, certainly no harm to come from that. Do your customers ever ask for anything else?
Well, there's some that thinks the coffee's a mite strong, and I gives them a glass of water if they ask for it.
Mr. Blackwell, this water you give them, where does it come from?
Well, the water, Governor? That ain't no problem at all. I gets all my water from the Broad Street pump.
Everywhere he went, the answer was the same. The Broad Street pump. At number 37 Broad Street, there was a cartridge factory where 200 people were employed. Of these, 18 had died of cholera. The manager explained that 2 tubs of water were kept on the premises so that workers could drink whenever they wished. Of course, the water came from the Broad Street pump. The evidence seemed overwhelming, yet Snow was determined to weigh every scrap of it impartially. That was why the district workhouse puzzled him. The workhouse was practically surrounded by houses where deaths from cholera had occurred. Yet, out of 535 inmates, there had been but 5 deaths from cholera. He interviewed the man in charge, a soft-spoken Scotchman.
5 deaths? That's all we've had, Doctor.
Yeah, that's what's so surprising. If the mortality in your workhouse had been equal to that in all the houses all around you, you should have had more than 100 deaths.
I know. And we're very thankful indeed.
Ah, naturally. But I want to know why your people were spared while so many around you were not.
Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that.
Tell me, sir, these 5 who died, when they took sick, did you move them to separate quarters?
No, we would have liked to, but we couldn't. We didn't have sufficient room.
In other words, the sick stayed right alongside the healthy?
Aye.
Did the people who tended them develop any symptoms?
None at all. That I can vouch for, since I was one of the many who helped.
Ah, interesting. Most interesting. Now, one more question, if you will. Does this workhouse draw water from the Broad Street pump?
No, Doctor, it does not. Our water comes from the Grand Junction Waterworks. It's much better than the water from the Broad Street pump.
In other words, the workhouse never uses the Broad Street pump at all.
No, never.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Concluding that there was really no great increase in the epidemic, except among those people who used the Broad Street pump, Snow secured a sample of the water from the pump and examined it.
Mr. York, I am most anxious for you to see what I myself have already observed about this water. I want you to act as a sort of witness.
A witness, Doctor?
Yes, a witness against the Broad Street pump.
Have you noticed something wrong with the water?
I have indeed. Now I want you to see it. Would you take that bottle, please? Ah, thank you. Now, let us put a drop of the water on this glass plate, which I'm holding.
There it is.
Ah, good. Now we'll put it under this microscope and look closely at the water. Now, what do you see?
I see a great number of very tiny bodies.
Have you ever noticed them in drinking water before?
Well, I've never had a chance to look.
I can assure you that these bodies do not exist in pure water.
Are these bodies then the cause of cholera?
Yes, Mr. York, they are. These are the killers of all the unfortunate people who have died of cholera. And they are present in the water from the Broad Street pump.
Shortly thereafter, Snow made his report to the city authorities, a report which resulted in his first great victory. The handle of the Broad Street pump was removed, and the well itself abandoned. A still greater victory followed when, as president of the Medical Society of London, he presented his evidence to that body.
All the instances I have related proved without the slightest doubt that cholera is communicated through the medium of contaminated water. We must ask ourselves then, how are we to prevent cholera in the future? My recommendations are the following. First, to install an effective system of drainage. Second, to provide an ample supply of water quite free from all contamination. Third, to inculcate habits of personal and domestic cleanliness among our people everywhere. Fourth, to pay special attention to persons and ships arriving from infected places so that our city may not be infected by them. I feel confident that by attending to all these precautions, this disease may be rendered extremely rare. Indeed, it may be banished altogether from civilized countries. And these same precautions ought not to be confined only to cholera. The cleaner we make our own community in every respect, the less vulnerable we become to all diseases.
Dr. Snow's lesson was well learned. When in 1892 another epidemic struck Europe, the death rate in England for every 10,000 people was almost negligible. Yes, our freedom from the scourge of cholera is largely due to the keen insight and tireless effort of Dr. John Snow, pioneer in the study of cholera in particular and epidemics in general. Yes, Dr. John Snow was, in a sense, a health detective, and his conquest of cholera was a most important adventure in research. And that's today's Adventure in Research, produced in cooperation with the Westinghouse Research Laboratories. These programs are broadcast to armed forces personnel overseas through the facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Join us again next week for another transcribed story of science on Adventures in Research.
Welcome back. A great story, and I thought a very thorough investigation by Dr. Snow. I think the writer did a great job emphasizing the work of the scientist as a detective while also really telling an important story. I've just really discovered this series in the last few months, and I'm impressed, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. One final piece of trivia. If you're like me, you've never seen Adventure Time. It was canceled before I was born, and if it was ever available on repeat, I never caught it. However, the theme was written and performed by Joe Negri, who also took over hosting these series after Shannon retired in 1975 and carried on as the show's host for the last 4 years. Now, if the name is familiar, Negri also played Handyman Negri on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which I grew up on. So this is the first time I've been able to connect Mr. Rogers to old-time radio, even if it was by 2 degrees of separation. Now it's time to thank our Patreon supporter of the day. And I want to go ahead and thank Alex. Alex has been one of our Patreon supporters since August of 2020. Currently supporting the podcast at the rookie level of $2 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Alex. And that will do it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please follow us using your favorite podcast software. If you're enjoying the podcast on YouTube, be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and mark the notification bell. All those great things that help YouTube channels to grow. We'll be back next Tuesday with Ellery Queen, but join us back here tomorrow for Dangerous Assignment, where...
Still keep an eye on Antonina, who is now starting to back away down the street. That's why I didn't notice the guy who slips up behind me and jumps on my back. We all land in a heap on the sidewalk. I'm just getting to my feet when a size 12 foot catches me under the chin. I topple back, crash through a wooden railing, and drop into somebody's cellar.
In the meantime, send your comments to box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and check us out on Instagram. Instagram.com/greatdetectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.